Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast. I'm Jamie Lee Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quit lit authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast, Alcohol Free Life. And this is the first show where I've teamed up with a brand that I really love. I've wanted to share with you for ages some of my favourite resources for enjoying being sober. This is a big thing for me, as you know. And without doubt, what's helped me is being able to have a delicious alternative to alcohol when I'm entertaining or if I just fancy a really nice drink at home. We've spoken lots of times on the podcast, and I'm sure you're well aware of the work that Club Soda do. You know, we really want to ditch this whole concept that if you don't drink alcohol, that means you do want concentrated warm orange juice or water. No, it might be that you want something nice to drink. So you will, of course, be well aware of the rise in popularity of alcohol-free drinks. We've spoken a lot about the rise, the big brands, the artisan brands. There's just so much choice now. And so I really want to thank a brand called Sea Arch for collaborating with me. It's just the perfect non-alcoholic alternative, particularly if you're a gin lover. In fact, my husband, who loves his gin, but drinks moderately, one of those people, actually now really loves this because it's a really refreshing non-alcoholic spirit. And their hashtag is More Beautiful Without. I love that. It's a really gorgeous bottle. All of their imagery makes me just want to head off and get my, you know, some self-care in the form of a walk by the sea. So it's a really great drink. Natural flavours. It's vegan friendly. A lovely, delicate balance of botanicals. There's juniper in there. There's sea kelp. And it is this connection with the sea that I'm really impressed with this brand. So I thought it'd be great to invite one of the founders of the brand, Sarah, onto the podcast. So we're going to be talking about that. But before we do, I want to bring you an interview with a fabulous personal trainer, Molly Millington. So many people turn to exercise when they reduce their drinking or when they stop drinking. It's one of the better addictions, shall we say, for sure. It's not one I've cultivated, I have to say. But Molly is fabulously realistic. And although she is a personal trainer, she also does a lot of work around self-care and around happiness generally, so much so that she calls herself the Happiness Personal Trainer. And she's brought out this lovely book. It's very dip-in-able, 52 weekend challenges. Now, I know we're not doing this at the beginning of a year, but I reckon it doesn't matter because you can do these at any time. You can do them one after the other through the week if you want to. So that's the great thing about the book, 52 weekend challenges, cultivating health and happiness. Molly, welcome. Tell us a bit about your background, because I don't know very much about you. I've got your great book here, but other than that, I don't know very much about you. So tell us a bit about your story.
Sure. Well, first, thank you so much for having me on today. As you can tell from my accent, I'm not from England. I'm actually from America. I moved here in 2011, and actually I've got a day job in the scientific field, but I really found that fitness was my passion. So in 2009, I became a spinning instructor, and then in 2010, I became qualified as a personal trainer. I found that my members and clients were really asking me other questions about fitness, and I didn't feel qualified to help them. Mm. So I thought with that little extra knowledge, that would be great. So now I balance my day job with personal training on the side, and my happiness personal trainer ethos is one of promoting coaching throughout their life. So if they're not happy with how much time they spend with friends or family, we can make that one of their goals. I don't want to focus just on working out in the gym, but overall health, you know, it's a balance of everything around you. It's not just one or the other.
Yeah, absolutely. What's lovely about your book, it's 52 Weekend Challenges, Cultivating Health and Happiness. And what's lovely about this is it's very kind of dip-in-able. So it's the kind of book that, you know, it's great to get at the start of a new year, of course, but actually any time of the year is good to start looking after yourself and practicing kind of self-care. And over the course of your time working with people to help them with their goals or whatever it is they want to achieve, what do you think? You know, why do you think that we are so bad at caring for ourselves, at doing these little things? You know, because more and more we hear about people with anxiety. There's all kinds of issues in the UK. I mean, mental health is, you know, we read about it all of the time. And the key thing that seems to be missing in almost every case, and I know I've been, you know, very, very guilty of it, is we forget to look after ourselves. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think particularly in women, we've always been the nurturer, the home taker, the one who can multitask. So we are responsible for juggling all of these balls in the air and keeping everything in line, that we become less of a priority. But I think too now, with just technology has made everything so fast. We can fly anywhere around the world. We can talk to anyone anywhere. We're used to getting things instantly, that people just have these unrealistic expectations. And so because of that, we want more. We get anxious because we feel like we need to be doing more. That means we're sleeping less. And it all kind of snowballs into this thing where we just don't feel content. Social media is a huge problem. You have these, you're missing out on these great trips and going out for cocktails every night when it's just not realistic. It's curated. No matter who it is, your neighbor next door or the celebrity, they're only showing you the fun bits. Not often do they show you, you know, the night when they're crying at home because they're dog passed away, or, you know, they got canceled on last minute by somebody. So I think you really need to keep things in perspective, and just take a step back and say, it's okay to say no to things if that means that I will be happier in the long run. Because chances are, unless it's like a $1 million trip, you know, you're not going to miss out on too much if you stay home one night rather than trying to keep up with the Joneses next door.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about really just putting yourself first, isn't it? I suppose.
Yeah.
And sometimes people can think, well, that just feels selfish. but it isn't selfish, is it, to take care of yourself?
No, if you don't have anything to give to other people, that's not helpful. And depending on what it is it wrong to be selfish? If you don't feel like going out, you know, when you need a night to recharge, that's absolutely in your right. Mm.
Now, a lot of the people that will be listening to this are at a stage where they've given up drinking, given up alcohol, or they're thinking of cutting down on their alcohol. And it seems to be a time when so many people, obviously, they're kind of working out who they are again. It's a whole new
Definitely.
Thing. And in many, many cases, this is when they start to feel a little bit better. And that's when they come back to exercise, which maybe they haven't done for ages.
Yeah.
What I mean, is that a good thing? And how should someone make a start? You know, maybe if you have been a bit of a couch potato for an awful long time, what's the best way to get back to exercise? I'm sure one of your weekend challenges, if not more, looks at fairly, you know, relatively easy ways to get stuck in.
Yeah, so the first thing I'd say, it's great that they've chosen to give up alcohol. It's not for everybody. I know for me, I'd personally rather have dessert than a drink, but it does sometimes get awkward in social situations. So if you're just wanting to get back to exercise, I would recommend keeping the goals achievable. So it doesn't mean you're going to go every day at 5 o'clock in the morning, go to the gym and run an hour on the treadmill, but instead start by walking at lunchtime. You can download the NHS Couch to 5K app. It's great. It helps you with intervals. So gradually over time, you build up that distance. Mm-hmm. But I'd also say you need to find a fitness activity that you enjoy. If you hate running, don't decide to become a runner. Try your local gym. There'll be different classes that you can like. Or if you like swimming or fencing, pole dancing, bowling, as long as you're not sitting on the couch, you can definitely try anything and keep, you know, trying different ones until you find the one you like. Because once you find the one you like, it doesn't seem like a chore anymore. You will actually look forward to it.
Mm. But what's the optimum kind of amount of exercise? Because I've also heard people say they come off of one addiction and then they become addicted to something else. Now, I suppose becoming addicted to exercise per se isn't the worst thing that could happen.
Well, there is a balance,
Yeah, but I mean, how much exercise do we actually really need to do to be healthy? I mean, if, you know, if like me, I mean, I really, really don't enjoy the gym. I just really don't like it. So, and I don't like running either. I'm really happy to walk and I love dance and things like yoga. But what's the kind of amount that I've got to do really if I want to be as fit and healthy as it's possible to be?
I mean, it really depends on the person. So the government recommends 10,000 steps a day. And with most activity trackers or even iPhones have an app that if you keep it in your pocket all the time, you can monitor that. There's some people that say 20 minutes a day of brisk exercise or 30 minutes a day. It's finding that chunk that's good for you. And it's going to depend on your age, your fitness level, where you're starting from. So the best thing would probably be to talk to your GP to devise a plan, because they're going to know your health history. For example, if you're coming back from injury or if you have a medical condition, that's going to affect how much time you should exercise too. But I also think it depends on how it makes you feel. So I know for me, if I don't run for 30 minutes, I won't get that endorphin kick. So it's me mentally knowing when I go out for my run, I've got to keep going if I want to feel that high afterwards.
Mm. Yeah. And of course, in the book, you talk about nutrition and about what we should eat. And I'm guessing your approach is fairly common sense. So tell us your take on food.
Right. Well, I've a health coach with the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. And in that, we do really talk about balance and finding out why you crave things when you do, if you're an emotional eater. And it is, I hate to say, easier to outsmart your diet in the kitchen rather than try to burn it off later in the gym. Mm. So a lot of people go by the 80-20 rule. 80% of the time, try to eat well. Vegetables and fruit don't have a lot of calories and they will fill you up. But if you're going to have a chocolate bar after your sandwich at lunchtime, which I normally do, that's fine too. It's just having that self-control and watching and being aware of what you're eating.
Yeah.
And a good thing for keeping track of that is just writing it down or using an app like MyFitnessPal, and then you can track and you can kind of guesstimate what you're consuming. Until I started using MyFitnessPal, I was probably consuming 3 times as much as I should. And then once I started to write it down, I realized that this mindless eating was happening all day. And yeah, I've been able to really address that.
Yeah, you've got in the book week 24. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Record keeping. So yeah, absolutely. A food diary, because you're absolutely right. It's very easy to say, well, you know, I don't know why I'm putting on weight because I haven't had any sugar. And they go, well, really, write down everything. Oh yeah, there was that cookie or whatever.
Yeah.
But on that note, of course, again, back for people who have quit the alcohol, just tell us a little bit about that, because often, you know, we forget that, particularly if we've been drinking wine, there's a lot of sugar, a lot of empty calories there. And so when we stop, you know, our body very, very often craves sugar. Just tell us a little bit about that and how we can best address that, because, you know, I have heard people say, you know, I've given up the booze, but literally the chocolate bars are calling me, you know, sometimes in the middle of the night.
Yeah, so I'd say just to try to find a good substitute. So for me, I like to take apples and put cinnamon on it, fresh apples, or nuts with dried fruit. That'll also be sweet. So yeah, it's going to be, part of it is the stimulus of the texture and part of it is the stimulus of the taste. Mm. So that's something you need to, again, be mindful of. And if you do have a craving, see if you can let it pass. So drink water or go for a short walk or do your nails. So your hands, you can't actually eat anything or drink anything. And then you can see if there's a connection or if you need to look at it in a different way.
Yeah. I think mindfulness is really a kind of thread that runs through everything, isn't it? So, you know, if somebody's new to the concept of mindfulness, where should they start?
That's a great question. I'm actually just starting to learn more about it myself. And when I think of mindfulness, I think it is just more being aware of what you need, aware of what your body's calling for, and aware of what's around you and how that impacts how you feel. So I'd say, you know, getting a book out from the library. There's also some mindfulness apps out there, but just really thinking about yourself and taking time to consider what makes you happy, what brings you joy, what do you need in your life? Mm-hmm. And then from there, you can try to ask the universe for it or make steps to give you what you need to have that calm, that energy, that peace in your surroundings.
Yeah. One of the nice things about the book, as we've said, it's very dip-in-able, and there's you know, an idea for each week, but of course we can do them anytime. And
yeah,
week 28, which feels very relevant for me right now, is declutter to de-stress. And I have spoken about this, the importance of, you know, decluttering is very much an act of self-care. You know, for some of us, I mean, well, for me, it sometimes feels so overwhelming. I can kind of think, all right, I you know, my office is a tip, my bedroom, I've got a floor drobe. That's my classic joke, you know, no clothes are not anywhere other than, you know, laying across the floor. And yet it can feel massive, like a massive task. So I know one of your tips is just to approach this in small steps, isn't it? Just, tell us about your weekend challenge of decluttering.
Yeah. So this is actually more for my husband, because I also have a floor drobe. I don't have a desk, so I have piles of paper on the dining room table. And it's something we're really working on this year. But yeah, I too will often feel overwhelmed. So I tell myself, I've got 30 minutes. I take a pile of stuff, sit down on the couch, pop on one of my favorite TV shows, and I just go through the pile of paper. And then usually by then I'm like, actually, this isn't too bad. And then I'll go get another pile of paper. Or you can just say, I need to fill up one bag to send to the charity shop or one bin bag. Mm-hmm. So again, it's setting those manageable goals and expectations so it's not totally overwhelming. I mean, you can even set a kitchen timer, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And when you get to 15 minutes, you just stop. And it's easy as that. And I think the other important thing too, though, is if you cohabitate with someone is that you really explain to them why it's hard for you to declutter and that you're not doing it to be malicious so they can understand where you're coming from. So for my husband, he hates mess and I hate dirt. So we're at very different ends of the spectrum, but I've explained to him, like, it's not, you know, it's not that I want to keep this stuff, but some of it I think I might need for my business. Some of it I've been meaning to sell on eBay. Some of it I have an emotional attachment to. So it's, there is emotion with each object at some times, like the book debate that's just come up with only having 30 books.
Oh, please. I saw one of those posts on Facebook about, I won't have any of that malicious talk. I only have 30 books. You have to be kidding me. I've got 30 books, at least 30 books next to me on one shelf here.
Yeah.
Please.
Well, we found that out when we moved to the from the US to the UK. I got rid of so many shoes and so many books. It was ridiculous. And so I think that almost not scarred me, but made me appreciate a bit more. And plus we have a super tiny flat compared to the US. So I'm very aware of what I can and cannot have. But yeah, somehow the books creep in. I've got a Kindle now. So the other alternative would be to go digital. So don't buy CDs or records anymore, but get everything digital that you can. And that'll help with some of the declutter. So if you don't get it in the house, then you don't have to worry about getting it out later.
Yeah. And how do you think that does relate to self-care? Because, in the same breath, there's the decluttering, but then there's also, and I know you talk about it in the book, I forget which week you list it under, but there's also the digital detox. Because the other thing that we're all doing way too much of, I nag my teenagers, but, I'm as guilty, really. We are constantly locked to our phones, whether it's social media or waiting for an email to come in or a text message or WhatsApp or, it goes on and on and on and on. And actually, we particularly if you keep your phone in the bedroom, which is one of my big no-nos.
Yeah.
that really is a top self-care tip, is get your phone out your bedroom. But what's your take on having a digital detox?
Well, I will admit it's very hard for me too, but it comes back to this society we've created where no one's allowed to be bored anymore. So if you're sitting for a minute waiting for a train, God forbid you have to sit there and look off into space, but instead you immediately go to your phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And digital detox though allows you to think about that mindfulness, what you need, what brings you peace, allows you just to breathe and just quiet your brain. I mean, our brains are processing so much information nowadays, instant emails, apps, music's always on in the background, that you just don't ever get that sense of peace or calm.
Yeah.
So by having that digital detox, again, there's that fear of missing out, but I don't think anything huge is going to happen. You can call somebody. That's something that's definitely becoming a lost art form, or writing a letter. You don't always need to be engaged though and online to be entertained. There's lots of options in the book of other ways you can connect to people and spend your time that don't involve a phone, an iPad, or a laptop.
Yeah. And on that note, I know that, in the book you talk about getting out into nature. Tell us about the importance of that. Because again, a lot of us, we can find ourselves, particularly if the weather isn't great, in the winter in the UK, you can find yourself holed up. and unless you force yourself, you don't really actually get out even into a park or a garden if you're not careful.
It's interesting though you said that, because I see that a lot of British families, when it is nice out, is it not raining, I do see lots of families that will go out for a walk, and I think that's fantastic. Again, it's that listening to the science of silence, listening to the birds, smelling the wind in your face. When I take my dog out, I make a point of leaving my phone at home, because it's the one time that I have to be out in nature, and so I might as well enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I'm also really interested in the Blue Mind movement. So that's where you can use water as a way to calm yourself, lower your blood pressure, connect to nature and the ocean, that saltiness. I'm an Aquarius, so I don't know if that has something to do with it, but I do think spending time with nature is just so important to reset your pace. London life is crazy. And if you can get into a park, it just kind of lets you slow down a bit.
Yeah. I mean, I'm my absolute self-care favorite is to walk by the sea in any weather. Actually, I particularly love it in the winter. The bad news is I don't live near the sea. So I have to schedule it into my diary, but I've kind of learned over the years that I go a bit nuts if I don't. So I really do try and plan, even if I just have to get a train and then go and walk along the seafront for an hour. I mean, what's the psychology of that? Why does that make such a difference for me? Because it really does.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm looking into more. And I don't know what it is, if it's maybe mimicking being in the womb and having that rush around you. The salt, who knows? But yeah, in the same way, I've always said I want to live 1 hour from the ocean and 1 hour from skiing. And it's just having that connection to being outside. I haven't found it yet in England. Might be in Scotland, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's it. That's the only place you'll manage that is in Scotland, yeah. Definitely. the other one tip that I'd love to pick up on. It's something that I don't think I've seen anybody else write about, and it's really cool. It's week 33, and that's yard games. So tell us about that. Again, we're back outdoors, of course.
Yes. So this one's more inspired from having nephews at home. And I wrote in my university days doing my master's, in America, we do this thing called tailgating, where you have a party, a big picnic before a big sporting event. And the friends I made in Michigan were all about being outdoors and playing games. So it's just fun. You have some banter. You can run around. You can be silly. They're not hard. It's a beanbag toss or throwing a rope with some balls on the end or throwing a frisbee. And again, it's something that you can do with your family, your friends, your community. And it's just getting people outside, offline, and just really enjoying time together, you know, paying attention to each other. Even if at a meal, how many times do people pull out their phones? It's just reconnecting with people. That's what we're really missing today.
Yeah. Now, I know that a very important word when we're talking about happiness is gratitude.
Yes.
Tell us about week 13, where you suggest an attitude of gratitude.
Absolutely. I was raised to always write thank you notes. And I think that's something that, again, is a dying art. Mm. But also, I find that people don't say thank you enough, or if they do, it's just in passing. You know, thanks for opening up the door. But how often do you stop and say, no, really, that was a big help. I had luggage. I was carrying my kid. So it's just something, it's not only for you to express gratitude and make you think about what you should be grateful for, but also letting the person on the receiving end know that their actions do make a difference in someone's life. I keep a gratitude journal. So like once a week I'll write in it, and you know, I'm grateful for having a job. I'm grateful for having a husband. I'm grateful for having food in my refrigerator. Or one week it'll be, oh, I'm so grateful that I got a seat on the tube because I was so tired. You know, it's just keeping things in perspective and realizing that most of us are quite lucky in what we have and taking a moment to recognize that.
Yeah. And then linked to that, giving back. You know, we hear a lot now about kindness and the fact that, you know, kindness is actually good for you. And by providing an act of kindness, you're actually probably doing more for yourself than for the recipient. So tell us about your challenge there.
Yeah, well, again, it's that connecting to community. So one of the challenges is to volunteer, but it doesn't have to be on a grand scale. If you've got an elderly neighbor who needs help taking their bins out or needs help dusting, you know, you can definitely go and stop and help them. Or if you have another neighbor who can't get her hair done because she always has the kids on the weekend, you know, you can offer to help her or set up something routinely. And it is, it's giving back something to less fortunate people. It's a way to help you see different walks of life, meet people that normally wouldn't be in your circle of friends, and just helping the community in general. Because if we don't have each other, you know, where are we left to?
Absolutely. So, you know, you've got lots of little things in the book, lots of opportunities for people to write their own notes as well. We've kind of touched on nutrition and exercise and mindfulness. What about sleep? Because again, going back to people who have given up the booze, sleep's a big one, because often you find you can't sleep at all, literally not at all for a bit till things get sorted out. So what are your tips for a good night's sleep, if you like? And also, you know, again, that age old question, how much sleep do we really need to be healthy and happy and you know, to be in optimum health?
So most people need somewhere between 7 and 8 hours of sleep. I'm pretty sure, I don't have scientific information, but need 9 hours, and that's without exercise. So it will be some trial and error. I know some people who just need 5 hours and they're really refreshed. I find it's helpful to set an earlier bedtime, and then you've got some time to adapt. So you can get a lavender scented pillow spray or a little sachet that's a calming smell. Perhaps you need some white noise or some waves crashing. You said you like the sea, so perhaps the sea would be very therapeutic for you and put you to sleep. You also mentioned leaving your phone out of the room. And I know for me, if my mind's racing, I'll check my phone. Did I put that in the diary? But if it's in the other room, then I just have to say, you know, I'm going to forget about it. Or just have a pad and paper next to your bed. And then you don't have to turn on. Also, now they have blue tinted lenses. So if you do turn on your screen, or there's an app for this as well, it can take the blue light out. So it makes it easier for you to fall asleep. But it's just kind of having that routine. I like turning my electric blanket on 30 minutes before I go to bed, so it's nice and warm. Although most people say your room should be a bit cool to fall asleep, but that for me just keeps me awake. So it's little tweaks, change one thing at a time and find something that works for you.
Overall then, Molly, what would you like people to get from the book? You know, what's the kind of core message, if you like, of what you're trying to help people with?
Yeah, so I mostly just wanted people to be confident in knowing that if they wanted to change, that they could. And it's by setting those small goals. So it's a weekend challenge. It's only those 3 days. So you've got 4 days where you don't have to worry about it. I tried to make them achievable, so they're nothing that's too crazy. And there should be enough that you could do it with your colleagues at work. You could do it with your family could do it together, or your friends. But it's just giving people that confidence to take a little step outside their comfort zone. Means that they can grow, they can learn something about themselves, and it's not too scary. Mm. And that was the big thing, is just getting people who are new to exercise, who want to make a change but don't know where to start, just give them that little nudge out the nest and get them to try something new.
Yeah, I love the fact that in addition to your you know, your suggestions for each weekend, you've got some quickie workouts at the back of the book. And they're super helpful, actually, because they really are just things you can do, you know, at home, you know, holding a water bottle or whatever. I'm going to get to the gym just super quick. I'm definitely going to try some of these. So I will I will report back.
Let me know how it gets on. But yeah, again, that's something. So if you can't get away from the house, if you can't afford a gym membership, the workouts don't require too much equipment. As you mentioned, you can use a water bottle or a soup can, or you can fill up your milk jug when you're done with water to make it a bit heavier. But again, it's just that getting started. And if you find what you love, then you can pursue it further in your own time and in your own way, in an environment and a budget that fits you.
Yeah, brilliant. Molly, thank you. If anybody is watching this, here's the book. I'm holding it up there. And we'll put a link to it. It's 52 Weekend Challenges, Cultivating Health and Happiness. Molly Millington, the Happiness Personal Trainer. I really appreciate it. Do you want to give us your website so people can find more information about you?
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much for having me. My website's www.ptmolly with an IE, .com. And you can also find me on Instagram and Twitter at ptmolly.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
So make sure you grab yourself a copy of Molly's book. Lots of self-care tips in there. So I don't think we really need to have another one from me this week. But for the record, in terms of snacks, I'm currently loving grabbing a handful of almonds and a square of really, really good dark chocolate, preferably raw chocolate, when I need a bit of a sugar hit or when I'm craving a nice drink. It's a really simple, easy snack, and it absolutely hits the spot. And that, of course, brings me beautifully to my chat with Sarah Yates from Sea Arch, as promised. So we're talking non-alcoholic drinks today, and my guest is Sarah Yates, co-founder of Sea Arch with her husband Jeff. Sarah, your drink Sea Arch is just beautiful. It is the most gorgeous, beautiful bottle. It looks like an absolute treat, and it's just so lovely to be able to speak to you. We'll talk more about Sea Arch particularly and how it came about. But first of all, just tell us a little bit about your background. You and your husband, because you've kind of worked in the hospitality industry in one way or another for a while, haven't you?
Yes, that's right. Our background is all hospitality, really. We met many, many years ago in Germany, in Munich, actually, where we both worked at the Munich Hilton. He was a pastry chef and I went over there as a trainee housekeeper.
Oh, wow.
Straight from college. Well, trainee housekeeper at that point meant scrubbing toilets for 6 months, really. Oh. But I got very good at it, and it was a great way to see a new city, you know, and I did progress on from there, really. And we met, got together, And then we travelled working in various hotels in Germany and Switzerland. And we did end up in Saudi Arabia for a year, which, of course, is very dry.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that was good. And then we came back to London. Jeff was the pastry chef at the Park Lane Hilton there, which was great. I went back into education. But then we decided we'd come down, back down to the southwest where I come from. My roots are very much here in Devon. And we started our own cake business, selling gâteaux and desserts to the trade, which went really, really well. We did that for quite a few years. We had children in between. Then I went back into education again, went back to university, decided to do a degree. And I graduated with the first class honours at the age of 50.
Wow, well done you. That's good.
Very, very mature student. I was actually older than a lot of the parents of the I was in class with. So that was very strange. But it was a great experience. Loved it. And that really inspired me to start another business. So that's when I started the wine bar in Torquay, which we had for 4 years. We grew that. And it was really my baby. I wanted to do that. So I was inspired to do that. And we ran it for 4 years, and it was a very interesting time. It's very hard work. Mm. You know, one of my strengths is hard work. I'm a grafter, and you know, we worked harder than hospitality, and anyone in it will tell you is very, very hard work. But it was enjoyable. It was great. Met lots of people, had lots of great times.
Sure.
Built a really good reputation there. And that was when we first got into this idea of non-alcoholic drinks, really, as more and more people were coming in, you know, looking for something nice to drink that wasn't alcoholic and wasn't sugary, but still made them feel part of the group. Mm. You know, whilst we were selling lime and soda or various soft drinks, which were usually very, very sugary. So that sort of was giving us beginning to ferment the idea of ferment.
Very, very, very good.
We need to grow the idea of a non-alcoholic drink.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really interesting, isn't it? You know, that there has been such a rise in the popularity of non-alcoholic drinks. And I mean, one would think it's always been that way, but of course it really hasn't. I mean, up until a few years ago, the non-alcoholic wines, for example, were, you know, that were really pretty rubbish, actually. They tasted pretty much like vinegar, and there really wasn't very much else. And as you say, if you're in that pub environment or a wine bar or a hotel, a restaurant, whatever it is, if you've got non-drinkers coming in, and of course people choose not to drink for a variety of reasons, they might be driving, breastfeeding, you know, pregnant, teetotal, whatever it might be, you know, I mean, I know that personally I absolutely don't want a warm orange juice, and you know, it's, I'm sure you very much saw that trend of making something grown up, you know, a proper nice drink. Now I know you work with closely with Club Soda, who are a kind of movement, if you like, community, and they're very engaged in campaigning for pubs and restaurants and bars and function rooms to offer non-alcoholic drinks. I mean, from your perspective, how are things moving in that respect? Because it, you know, it really has been the case for many years that if you rock up to a function, you're going to be offered, you know, red wine, white wine, and then for the non-drinkers, it literally is you know, the warm orange juice. How is it moving, do you think, in that arena?
But I think in London, it's way ahead of us down here in Devon.
Is it?
Mm. I certainly say that. You know, you look on menus now in any restaurant you go to and you will find non-alcoholic alternatives. And there are spirit-based non-alcoholic drinks out there, and they're appearing on lots of these menus. Mm. And so it is more out there than it was, certainly in London, the big city. You'd expect it to be there first, and it is. Down here, I think we're probably lagging behind that somewhat. We are now starting to go out, and we are in some bars and restaurants here, and it's going down really, really well. The fact that people have got an alternative, and it's a valid, lovely alternative. Mm. It's the lime and soda, and it's not, you know, a soft sugary drink. And people are becoming, are also more and more health conscious, and not just you know, non-alcoholic. It's the calories they're interested in, the allergens they're interested in, the natural ingredients they're interested in, and we're able to offer that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, let's talk about your drink then. You decided to make a kind of version, if you like, of gin, a non-alcoholic version of gin. Gin, of course, is, I mean, massively increased in popularity over the last few years, hasn't it? It's incredible. I just don't remember, you know, when I was, you know, I was younger, I don't remember people talking about gin all the while, but now there are whole, you know, there's whole kind of organizations and clubs and everything devoted to gin. So a non-alcoholic version is a fantastic idea. So where did you start then? Presumably you tried to look at, you know, why is it that people like the gin, that, you know, the various botanicals?
Yeah, I think the thing with gin is it's when you distill it, it's quite an easy thing to make. You know, you throw things in and distill it and you get the flavours off. You know, you put in all your different botanics that you want. So it is a relatively simple thing to make. It's not like whiskey, which is aged over, you know, years and years. It can be made. And wine, again, also is a lot in the how you make wine. But with gin, you can make it more simply. So I think it's grown and loads of distilleries have grown up and promoted it.
Right.
And it's a very, very broad church now. You know, gin... What gin tastes like is, you know, it's very, very broad. There are many, many different flavours and takes on what should and could go into it. You know, the gin liqueurs are really growing in flavours. I think you can get salted caramel gin now. I can see, these other flavours are growing. So it is still growing and it's getting a broader and broader church. So we enjoyed drinking gin. So we decided we would make something, and of course it's very popular. It was the most popular spirit in the wine bar, so we felt that would be a good place to start, and we could access some lovely botanicals.
Are you still there? Have I lost you?
No, I'm still here.
Oh, you're still here. Oh, you're still there now.
Yes.
Oh, okay, sorry. Let's just pick up from that. You said some lovely botanicals. Okay, let me just come in there. Sorry, we just start. I just lost connection for one sec there. Sorry, we'll carry on. Okay. So when you say some lovely botanicals, obviously you've got juniper in there, which would be the kind of classic gin flavour. What else have you used?
Yes, that's right. We've got some cardamom and coriander. We've also got some, that gives a little bit of warmth in it. There's some citrus in it. We've got some lemon, we've got some blood orange in there. So and we've also added the kelp. We've added the sea kelp because we wanted it to reflect our coastal roots and our coastal inspiration, really. And we've carried that right through to the bottle, to the name. So in the sea arch name, you know, that comes from, there's a sea arch in Torquay. I can't actually see it out of my window. I'm looking now, but I see the sea. I can see the sea. The sea arch is just around the corner. But, you know, there's some beautiful sea arches in the southwest, well, all over the country. But, you know, that inspired the name, really. Mm. And the idea that something in nature, by being eroded, becomes more beautiful. And the idea that you can take something and make it more beautiful because it doesn't have any alcohol in it and it's more beautiful. It makes you more beautiful as well.
Yeah, lovely. It's such a lovely idea. Now, when you say sea kelp, I mean, I've kind of got visions of, you know, huge great bunches of seaweed, but I'm guessing it's not quite that simple. Can you describe it? I mean, how where is it sort of harvested and how do you come to use it? Excuse me if that's a really daft, ignorant question.
No, that's okay. I mean, it is harvested from the sea. There's a company in Sidmouth called Ebb Tides who we're looking to use to harvest our sea kelp from. They, you know, they're a lovely business. It's local in the southwest. So we're looking to make sure we use local botanics and products in Sea Arch, so that it's a Devon product, really. Mm.
Yeah, that's great. And so if someone were to have some sea arch, then I guess you would suggest you can serve it over ice with some tonic. Is that how you would usually suggest one has it?
Yeah, I mean, we call it a classic C&T. So we would fill a lovely balloon glass. Again, we would make a fuss of it like you would a gin and tonic. You know, it's not put in a small glass, like a, you know, it's made a nice fuss of in that you have a lovely balloon glass or a copa glass or a lovely tall highball and fill it up with ice I love lots of ice in mine. A squeeze of citrus is really nice, and a tonic of your choice. You know, you can put in Indian tonic, or there's Mediterranean works well, or if you want to go for a lighter option, then the light tonics are lovely. It also works really well with grapefruit and rosemary in it, with a little bit of grapefruit tonic, or cucumbers, beautiful, all those fresh citrus things that are really refreshing. You know, again, that idea is to reflect the coast and that feeling of uplifting and refreshing, really.
Yeah, that's lovely. I mean, there are some lovely tonics now, which really helps your case, doesn't it? You know, lots of different flavors.
Tonics anymore, like the gins, really. It's, you know, there's at Christmas we did a lovely we'd sliced up some clementine with some cranberries and served a beautiful clementine tonic with it as well, and clementine and cinnamon, I think it was. So there, you know, you can cover all the seasons and occasions are there.
Excellent. And what about the you know, a lot of people always, you know, say, well, if I'm going to switch to a non-alcoholic drink, the concern is always that they're going to be having more calories, although of course there's a ton of sugar in wine and all the rest of it, isn't there? But people are often worried about the you know, the sugar content. So what would that be in yours? What would the kind of calorie situation be?
Yeah, there's no sugar. It's sugar-free. And what I would say is, if you put it with a light tonic, you're talking about 15 to 20 calories.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
How much tonic you put in it, maybe whole bottle in, or how much you put in it. But something like, for a small bottle, 15 to 20 calories. So it can be a low-calorie drink. And, of course, you could mix it with soda, I guess.
Yes.
You know, put a nice bit of fruit in and get your five a day as well.
Yeah, absolutely. What's quite interesting is some of the non-alcoholic wines, or the low alcohol wines that are on the market, and the beers are de-alcoholized, aren't they? They actually kind of brew them or ferment them, and then they take the alcohol out. But in your case, there was no alcohol to start with. Is that right?
Well, what we do is we use different extraction methods. Some of the botanics are macerated, so they're sort of steeped or steamed, and some of them are distilled, and then the alcohol is removed afterwards. So there's different, all the botanics are treated differently to extract the methods, to extract them best way we can, and then we blend them together afterwards.
So right.
Treated as individual.
But in terms of sort of alcohol content, you know how if you get a bottle of low non-alcoholic wine, it still says 0.05% ABV, which is apparently less than you'd have in a banana, apparently. But in yours, is there an ABV, just in case anyone's interested?
Yeah, it's less than 0.5.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So it is the low. Okay. I think it's like you say, it's in a same as in a banana or an orange juice. And I think they're trying to do something now in Parliament, although I think Brexit's probably squashed any chance of doing that. But to equalise this non-alcoholic with alcohol-free, because we can't say we're alcohol-free.
It's so confusing, isn't it? It's very, very consuming. For someone who's just kind of starting out on this path and deciding they don't want to drink anymore, you kind of go into a supermarket or a store or even online, and it's terribly confusing. So it would be great if that was sorted. Now, I know you're part of the Mindful Drinking Festivals that Club Soda organise. How is that when you pop up at these shows and people come by and they see your beautiful turquoise bottle and taste it for the first time? It must be amazing for you, actually. You must see some very surprised faces.
It's lovely to be at Mindful anyway, because you're surrounded by both on the stands by like-minded people who are selling non-alcoholic beverages, and by the people who come up to the stand who choose to go to the Mindful, most of which, not all completely teetotal, but they're there because they know what they're there for, to buy non-alcoholic drinks, and they've already bought into this idea,
which is great.
So you're not selling a concept to them, you're selling your drink, or you're showing them, you're sharing your drink with them. And so it's great. And yes, it's great to see their faces when they try it. They don't know what to expect. It's quite a new idea to a lot of people. And, you know, we're really, really pleased with the response. It's been really, really positive.
And what about in terms of the pubs? I know you're part of the... Oh, You still there, Sarah?
Yeah,
oh.
I am. Yeah.
God, that's
sorry.
So weird. It keeps cutting out. Okay, I'll just pick up on that one again. Okay. What about the pubs and the clubs and the restaurants then? I know you said you've managed to get into a few in the south. I know you're part of the Pub 19 show. I guess there it really is a case of, there's a little bit of re-education needed, isn't there? Because in a lot of pubs and restaurants across the UK, you really, you know, if you don't want to drink alcohol, you've got the option of kind of tap water or if you're lucky, a few soft drinks. And that really is it. So how do you think that world is changing? Do you think that the restaurant industry, the catering industry, is going to start to come on board over time?
Definitely. I definitely think they're going to come on board over time. I think they are doing already. You know, my evidence from down here is that people are, you know, the actual traders, the bar owners are and restaurant owners do accept that it is something that's growing, that it is coming. And I think that they are beginning to embrace it, beginning to, like I said, down here, not, you know, it's a slower, slower thing that's happening, but it is happening. Mm. And I think that will be aided by the response they get, but you have to get them to buy into it, get them in. They have to, because it's a new idea, they have to be willing to show customers products, not just like having another gin on the shelf. It's having something, a whole new idea that people need to try. And there's a restaurant that we're working with, a fish restaurant in Torquay we're working with, and they are really enthused about it, and the barman's great, he loves it, and he talks to his customers about it, and you know, they will then try it. So that's important, trying to educate the bar owners. I know Laura does a lot of work with that where she is, and this presentation we're doing will be a lot about educating, you know, those pub landlords and owners into just trying a couple of, you know, trying a couple of them just to see what the customers actually think, not just what they think.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think they'd be surprised. I think they don't always get that, you know, get that idea that people are looking for these alternatives. Mm. They don't always get that. They've got their alcohol on the shelves and that's what we sell.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. You know, we were talking, just a few minutes ago about the kind of almost the presentation is important as well. I mean, you know, you go out to a restaurant, maybe it's a family birthday or whatever, and the people who are drinking, you know, are given this lovely glass and, you know, a little bit of cucumber on the side and you know, served over ice. And if you're not drinking, you know, you've literally got a kind of massive, great big kind of tumbler with some Coke in it or some orange juice in it. It's not the same vibe, is it? And I think that's also got to change. I think, you know, I think you're absolutely right. And also, you know, I think that restaurants and bars, I mean, one of their concerns, I'm guessing, it will be price points, won't it? And they're going to be looking at the pricing of all of this. I mean, how does that work? Because obviously your product isn't mass produced. So I'm guessing that the cost of the industry is going to be a little higher. So how will that impact on it, do you think?
Yeah, I think for us, you know, we would say to pitch, you know, it's a luxury, it's a premium product. And like I say, it's not cheap to produce. The packaging isn't, the drink isn't, and it's not, no, it's not cheap to produce. But I think if you're selling a premium product, you expect it to be, you know, at a higher price. Although, you know, people say, well, it's non-alcoholic, how can you charge? And I would say, you know, the botanics are individually made. They are, you know, it is put into a lovely bottle, and we've had to do a lot of research and development to bring it into that, you know, to get it into the bottle. And I think people see it's something lovely. And like you say, again, that comes to the presentation. If it's presented really well with the lovely garnishes and a premium tonic, then I think people will see the value in it, and they will start to drink it. Mm. And they will not realize that they're not, or other people, and they won't realize they're the ones not drinking.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Again, being broken down.
Yeah, excellent. And so for the future then, well, what else is on the cards for you? Will you stay with this one product, or are you looking to develop more? And maybe if I interviewed you in a year's time, how might you think the whole kind of industry might have moved on?
Well, we certainly would be looking to do another flavour later on, and different size bottles of you know, to give the idea of gifts and make it easy for people to try the product when it's in a smaller bottle. So in try and encourage more people to try it. I would see it developing in this area down in the southwest. I would like to see sea urchin lots and lots of different food outlets and drink outlets down here. And our strategy or our plan is to go out and, you know, spread the word in the southwest, really, where it's not so, it's not such a big thing as it is in London, where the no and low alcohol bars are growing, and we sell to very our product is found in various online shops. Most of their business is, you know, is up the country. There isn't so much, although, you know, we see from our records that people are increasingly buying it down here.
Yeah, that's really good, isn't it? That's great. Well, I'm a very big fan of it. I think it tastes absolutely amazing. I think it looks totally beautiful. And I'm a very big fan of the sea as well. So anything that brings all of that together is good by me. So the website is notginlimited.com. Have I got that right, Sarah?
That's it. That's
great. Yeah. And thank you so much for being my guest. And I wish you all the best with this fabulous brand, Sea Arch. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you so much. Bye.
So here's the really great news. If you want to grab yourself some Sea Arch, I've got a competition running at the moment on my website, imperfectlynatural.com, where I promote and talk about lots of great brands and services that I love. So it's imperfectlynatural.com. And if you look over there, you'll find you could have an opportunity to win a bottle of Sea Arch and a whole bunch of lovely artisan tonics. So it's a really great prize. And it would be so amazing if someone from the podcast community was to win that prize. So have a go. You've got nothing to lose. It's really simple to enter. It's just a couple of really simple questions, which of course you'll know the answer to now that you've listened to Sarah speaking about the brand. And we still have lovely self-care prizes to give away with the charity project that I'm involved in, My Yard. So make sure you check us out on Instagram at Janie Lee Grace, and the charity is at myyard.org.uk. We are still in the middle of our Stay Dry Till July campaign, so use the hashtag Stay Dry Till July and tell us your favourite self-care tips. And don't worry about them having to be something that we've never heard of before. It really doesn't matter. It's just really nice to engage with you. And we've got some, as I say, some really nice natural, organic, various bits and bobs to give away. And the really important news is that we're hosting an event. We have told you about this before, but there's still time to grab yourself a free ticket. It's called Self-Care for the Sober Curious. So this really is very non-judgmental, and it really is for anyone. So whether you've quit drinking, you're thinking about cutting down, you just have that little voice in your head sometimes, maybe you know someone else who you think could really benefit, just bring them along. It's going to be very informal. It's a meetup, really. We will have some lovely alcohol-free drinks there. It's Monday the 11th of March at the newly renovated club in Dalston called the Jago. So it is completely free. We would very much appreciate a donation to the charity on the night, but that's not essential at all. But you do need to book the tickets because obviously they're limited. Book them through Eventbrite. It's a small, you know, exclusive affair. And we have none other than Claire Pooley coming along, author of The Sober Diaries, and Lee and Sean from Rock Sober. They're our special guests. So starts at 7 o'clock. The tickets are going to sell out because they're very limited. We will, I hope, have some Sea Arch for you to try as well. It's going to be a really great evening, and it would be so nice if some of you came along. So go to Eventbrite and type in My Yard, or if you can't find it that way, go to the website myyard.org.uk, or check it out on imperfectlynatural.com. There's all the info about it there too. And as I've already said, follow me on Instagram, use the hashtag Stay Dry Till July. Love to hear your self-care tips and your stories. I had a couple of really nice emails this week, and honestly, it's what keeps this kind of thing going, because it's quite a lot of work doing all of this, and it just makes such a massive difference when somebody drops you an email or a message on Instagram or Facebook and says, actually, your podcast has really helped me. You know, I've been wanting some inspiration. And we had some great comments, actually, after the interview with Patrick Regan last week. Wasn't he fantastic? I mean, I just constantly have his words in my head, actually. I thought he was really, really, really inspirational, really down to earth, as are all our guests. I'm very fortunate that I managed to get some really great people on the show to interview. So yet again, I'll ask if you would subscribe on iTunes if you haven't already, and give us a nice review for the show, if you like it, of course. And thank you again to those people who have left a comment. I will always respond if I can. And also, you know, one thing to say, and I don't think I've said this for a few weeks, if you are cutting down your drinking or if you have quit the booze, I want you to give yourself a massive hug from me, because it's a big thing. It really is a big thing. On the one hand, it's nothing, is it? On the one hand, it's just that you've stopped doing something that actually wasn't very good for you and it was costing you money. Oh, wow. Easy when you say it like that. But you and I know that it's a big thing. So give yourself a really big hug and tell yourself, well done. And I'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast with Jamie Lee Grace. Please subscribe to us on iTunes, rate us, share on social media, and tune in again.